You're listening to The Final Straw online at Asheville Free Media, ashevillefm.org. Also rebroadcasting on LPFM, on KXCF in Marshall, California, and KWTF in Sonoma County, California. This is your host, Bursa Goodness, and The Final Straw is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Cafe, a worker-owned cooperative at 48 Commerce Street here in Asheville, North Carolina, featuring all-organic coffee and milks, house-made baked goods, vegan sandwiches, alternative literature, and community events. You can find their online calendar of events at www.firestormcafe.com.
If you're gonna shoot up, please don't be somebody else's business.
And welcome to the show. So this week we're speaking with Michael Harney, coordinator of NEPA, the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville. Michael also works with WNCAP, the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. Today we're going to be speaking about needle exchange and harm reduction in Asheville and nationally. Michael, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
Oh, let me get that mic up. Okay.
Is this the one?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Very glad to be here this morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the work that you do with NEPA and what effects have you seen?
So the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville, we started it in 1994. And I say we, was with Marty Prairie. He was my boss at the time at the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. So though we both worked at and I currently work at the Western North Carolina AIDS Project, it's not actually affiliated officially or on paper with the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville. That was kind of separate. That grew out of what was called the PWA Coalition of the Blue Ridge, so the People with AIDS Coalition of the Blue Ridge. And in 1994, when I was doing some street outreach for Marty, he was my boss at the time at the AIDS Project, I noticed that we were tripping over needles in the, you might call the stroll area, the public sex worker stroll. And I asked him, I said, isn't there something we should do about this? And he had come through the epicenter of the HIV-AIDS epidemic in San Francisco and knew that the innovations around prevention work really come from that area of our country. And he, living here in Western North Carolina, said that's what we need to do, follow some of the patterns and the models of California and what they were doing. So we began researching needle exchange across the country. We went to places like Baltimore and New York City and Chicago and Milwaukee and L.A., Los Angeles and San Francisco and San Diego and saw how different programs worked and brought all that information back here, telling our North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services that this was a need in our state and in our communities. And they tried to debate back with us for several hours at this huge meeting we were at that, you know, bleach kits were already being distributed by our health department. So we had literature that we had picked up that said that scientifically known researches, you know, said that, that needles, to bleach needles was an ineffective way to reduce HIV among groups of people who might only have one needle, you know, or two needles. So it just wasn't enough. You had to have one needle per injection, per person, and that was, you know, the more ideal method. So we, you know, debated that with them, and then they would say, well, no, you're going to promote drug use or whatever, and we said, but drugs are already being used. You know, it's not we're promoting drugs. In fact, as a comprehensive harm reduction program that might include needle exchange, we might bring some people in that haven't seen a healthcare provider in a while or haven't seen a little bit of hope, maybe, that, that there's somebody that even gives a heck about, you know, them. And so over the years, I would say the changes that have occurred is that, that our community in Western North Carolina has been aggressively progressive and has supported needle exchange in the state when no other communities across the state of North Carolina had an openly active needle exchange program. You can't really, without scientific data, say that we've maintained a low prevalence maybe or reduced HIV or hepatitis infections definitely. We don't have the data that say that. But on the other hand, our prevalence of HIV infections that are intravenous drug use related, you know, if you ask, how'd you get it? Did you do it with a man? Did you have sex with somebody? Did you shoot a needle? Is it heterosexual? You know, was it transmitted via transfusion or something back in the 80s? All the different ways that that epidemiologically science looks at how HIV is transmitted, we have a very low prevalence of IV drug use transmission of HIV. So we can say that maybe it's working. But I think more than that, we've been a rippling effect across the state, and then we've community-wide been active enough that some of our experiences here are also similar in other cities and other states across the nation.
And how have what other programs around the state have developed? What other cities in North Carolina have active needle exchange programs?
From that time, the Raleigh-Durham area had some supportive community members, some of the health departments. I remember one of the health directors was Brian Letourneau in Durham County. He was very supportive of it, but the rest of the community didn't see it as the public health issue. So, you know, you and I, in prepping for this a little bit, we're talking about, you know, how do people bring different, interests to this subject matter. So to us, it was a public health issue primarily. And secondary issues, whether those be moral issues or substance use issues or legal or illegal use of drugs kind of issues, those are all secondary. So we saw this as public health. And so Brian Letourneau, for example, did too, but other community members didn't help. Out of that, there grew later, you know, 15 years later or so, the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition, which is operational now, in a third stage of the development of harm reduction in North Carolina. There was also a guy in Stephen in the Winston-Salem area of our state. He's operated needle exchange for a number of years, but had to be very careful not to be exposed or very open about it. So he was very much underground and knew a certain core group of people that needed access that he provided. There was also an exchange program that grew out of the Greensboro High Point area. There was a woman named Louise that was operating there, and at this point I don't believe she's still operational. So that's kind of what's, you say four areas of the state where there's known operation of needle exchange.
And it's in reading a bunch of the interviews that you had done with newspapers around the area and that were published elsewhere around the country, it stated over and over again that you do this work despite the fact that you're constantly in threat of, if law enforcement felt like coming down on you, it's illegal to exchange needles in North Carolina, correct?
That is correct.
So why hasn't the government come down on you?
It's interesting. Anytime somebody asks that, you know, superstitiously, I knock on wood a couple times. So if you hear the knocking, I'm knocking on the wood here in the studio. We were always so openly active about this that early on in the 90s, I say 1994 is when we began gathering all our information. We didn't really exchange a needle until about February of 1995. But by getting our, I said, ducks in a row, you know, by building a case, one component of that was to go to the police chief at the time, it was Will Anarino, and to speak with him in a real sensible way, you know, about the issues in our community, what this was. We were not here trying to promote drug use or somehow, you know, putting needles in the community. There were places in the community you could go and see, improperly disposed of needles just thrown behind a building or, you know, a trash bin or something like that. So it's not like there were no needles. We just built the case and really said we need to do this. Law enforcement has Sharps containers equipped in their cars. Why? Because they were coming across needles sometimes. I worked at a gymnasium here, and a lot of the police officers worked out at the gymnasium, so I was able to network with a number of them and actually did a ride-along with one of them. So we felt like we had a community presence and an open dialogue with both the police, the sheriff's departments, the mayors here that we've had over the years, on up to the government officials at the governor's level, you know, legislators and all those folks. I just think that that part of that was that law enforcement said, look, we've got plenty of other things to do. We are here. Our job is to uphold the law. So if you can get the laws changed, we'll uphold those laws. And if the law says that needle exchange is legalized and it's available to anybody that wants it, needs it, you know, it's in all cities or all counties or wherever, your health departments, however it were to be worked out, they would support that. What they asked us to do was not to rub it in their faces. That if we're in the middle of the street doing a needle exchange and the neighborhood said, hey, we just don't want this here, you got to get rid of it, they'll get rid of it. They're going to uphold the law. So we have worked, I say, in a collegiate way mm-hmm. with them, you know, to show them the issues, to discuss with them their issues, to find a way to operate and to stay operational all these years.
Putting on a different hat, can you talk about WNCAP?
Yeah, the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. I started there in 1993 because I was doing some volunteer work for them, and they asked me if I wanted to do an outreach job, and I didn't know what that was. That wasn't my background. But Marty Prairie was probably the greatest trainer, mentor, friend, boss that I've ever had. And he, who lived with HIV openly as an openly gay man and a Native American with HIV and openly gay, you know, he was a trifecta of power and a well-known across the country. So that's where I began the work that I was doing, that he was doing, that we did together. When he died in 2001, it was a tragedy for all of us, you know, his friends, his partner, his family, who've lost 3 children to HIV and AIDS out of 5 children. But we still keep in contact with his mom and dad, and they keep saying, keep doing the work, you know, it is Marty's memory, that sort of thing. So in 2001, from the point that he died, I came back to the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. So Marty and I worked from 93 to 96. We left there. There was a lot of political stuff going on, but we did work across the state, across the country. He did some international work in terms of HIV and AIDS and harm reduction. In 2001, I was asked to come back and officially work for the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. So I have been working there as a prevention worker, street outreach worker since 2001, and it continues. I hope to continue working there through the future. Sometimes people know me as the rubber man because we put out, for example, last year 185,000 condoms, roughly. It was 184,692 or something, whatever. So that number of condoms we do, and we do street outreach and bar outreach, and we do programs at treatment centers and at colleges, and sometimes after school programs or high school might ask us in. We can adapt programs as we need to for the community's educational needs and kind of support them with materials around HIV and AIDS, sexually transmitted diseases, hepatitis, information and prevention.
How do you generally distribute that many condoms? I mean, you might not have a huge amount of volunteers constantly working with you.
We have volunteer community agencies, businesses, organizations that allow us to put condom bowls out. So there are places like Firestorm, that's one of the sponsors of this show, that has a condom bowl. So each week I might take over 200 or 300 condoms in a bag, fill up the bowl, and leave some back stock. So the staff fills up the bowl throughout the week. If we just make it there once a week, sometimes I'm there twice, and I'll touch up the bowl when I'm there. We have some what I call daytime and nighttime places, some of the barber shops down on Eagle Market Street here. Lexington Avenue is a well-known commerce, a street of commerce here, and you've got coffee houses like Izzy's or Battle Cat. You've got, you know, Rosetta's is a restaurant in town that keeps condoms in their bathroom. Some of the nighttime shifts like Tressa's or O'Henry's or Smokey's or Scandal's or Hairspray, they might have a larger LGBTQIA kind of community, and we provide condoms there, sometimes dental dams, female condoms, lube, literature. And so all these places allow us to come in each week and fill the condom bowls, and people come and get them as they need them. We don't always have to be standing on the street to hand you a condom, but people know that they can access them either during the day or by night. And then supplementary to that, you might see a couple of us walking the streets or out, you know, at night, walking from one venue to another. And so that's how some of the street outreach is done.
and actually access them anonymously, which could be a huge positive, right?
Absolutely. And so my outreach bag, this is where I have to take off one hat and put on another. Though I'm on the shift for the Western North Carolina AIDS Project, maybe going to the bars or dropping off condoms, my outreach bag does have needles in it, and there are occasions when people want access to one or two or three or four or five points that I have with me, and I can give them some alcohol swabs, an antibiotic ointment, a Band-Aid or two, a cooker and a cotton, and then they're good to go too. So we kind of, in combination, do the same work.
Talking to the Michael Harney of NEPA now.
Yeah.
We had a prior conversation. You had talked about how people think about needle exchange or other harm reduction programs around drugs and the exchange of bodily fluids and the possibilities of infections of various sorts. Needle drugs are what most people think about, but not having really very much contact in my life with crack cocaine, you were talking about it actually being able to insert harm reduction into that in a way that I'd never heard of. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, harm reduction in and of itself means to reduce the harm to ourselves, to our loved ones, to our families, to our community. You know, it's that sort of thing. So people would argue it's, putting your seatbelt on in your car. Is that harm reduction? Could be. That you don't overdo it with chocolate today. Is that harm reduction? Maybe. Smoke one fewer cigarette than you might another day. So all of that is harm reduction. It's a philosophy, a concept.
But I was meaning in terms of, you were talking about the tips for the pipes.
Right. So in terms of crack, when I speak to a group, I might say it's not the crack so much that puts you at risk for HIV or hepatitis, but maybe what you do to get the crack. And it is sometimes how you administer the crack. So if you have a hot pipe that burns your lips and potentially, you have a cut lip now or a chapped lip and have to do things to get crack, and that might be to perform oral sex or have sex otherwise with, a dealer or with somebody that you may be getting the crack from, that may put you at risk for things. We have, part of the movement of harm reduction is to reduce the harmful effects of crack use in our population. So we have seen a reduction maybe in needle use in a lot of places, but crack is really prevalent. And people smoke it a lot of times. If they have a small pipe or a broken pipe, that can cut your lip or your tongue. And then if you've got blood, does that blood get transferred from there to somebody else? So we have disposable tips, and it looks like what you would use on a spark plug, a spark plug cover. It's a rubber end that can fit across the size of a crack pipe, and it reduces the harm to your lips. We have Chorboy, the filter, the kind of a metal filter that maybe people would put a crack rock on, so you have that available to people. There's some innovative organizations and groups and programs from here, even through Canada and some in Europe, that are trying to reach out to people who are using crack to let them know, again, we're here for harm reduction. Got no judgment. I'm not a prude about what you do. Just wondering if there's anything we can do for you. And that's one way that we try and reduce harm related to crack use.
So what changes have you seen in the way that governments, local, state, federal, have dealt with needle exchange and other harm reduction programs in the last few years?
Well, when you think about places as innovative and progressive as California, cities in California, I'm looking at our directory here, you've got the POINT program in San Rafael or Sharp in Santa Rosa and just, 20 others across the state of California, and they're doing some amazing work, and they're doing big numbers. When we have participated in the Beth Israel Survey of Harm Reduction Programs, the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville is considered a small program. But you've got small, medium, large, and extra large programs across the country. So it depends on where you are. There are legislative efforts that are different by state. So in North Carolina, Buncombe County here in Asheville, this county cannot supersede the state law. In California, where you can ask for a state of emergency be implemented in your county or in the city, then you can get around the law that might say that needle exchange is illegal in the state. by using a public health, emergency. Well, you can't do that here in North Carolina. So that puts a different burden on each state. And then in each community, it's a little bit different. So Asheville's a different kind of community. I think of Asheville as the western part of the state that follows what California does as the western part of our country. So what happens in California comes here maybe 10 years later, maybe innovative enough 10 years later, but what happens in Asheville starts to move eastwardly across the state, and I think that's what the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville has done. In terms of funding, we've been lucky that the North American Syringe Exchange Network and some of the other foundations like Comer Foundation, the Elton John, and Tides Foundation, and Levi's, has been National AIDS Fund, and folks like that have put money into prevention works, into harm reduction programs as they were adapted by state. So we've had funding that way, private funding. We've had no local funding here. The state of North Carolina does not fund needle exchange at all. It is still illegal, though the paraphernalia law allows pharmacists to sell non-prescription syringes and needles. At the federal level, finally, under the Obama administration, there was the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2010, which lifted the ban on the use of federal funding for needle exchange programs. Sadly, though, this year, in the 2012 budget, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2012 reinstated that ban on the use of federal funding for syringe programs. So it's backwards. We try and take a step forward, and then they always find a way to take two or three steps backwards. So I know President Obama's trying really hard, but he's not the dictator. Had he been the dictator, I see, in my view, that maybe we could have gotten a lot of other things done. He could have said, no, we're going to do this. No, we're going to do that too. We're going to have this. We're going to have that. But he works with a Congress that doesn't see the public health issue, that does bring, I think, a moralistic view of who uses drugs or who uses needles and who needs access. So, they're not thinking about diabetics maybe, but I'd like diabetics to be included in this discussion. Sometimes they don't have access to sterile injection equipment. What about steroid-using folks, Do they have access if they need to be? And just because they're, maybe big, good-looking, and basketball playing or football playing, baseball playing, they need access to needles. We have a large transgender community here in Asheville and across the country. Sometimes they don't have access to good public health, and they might use hormones at the street level and need access. Sometimes people from other countries administer ampules of medication by way of needle, so they need access. This is a public health issue, and that's how we adamantly proclaim the issue primarily as a public health issue to reduce bloodborne pathogens, including HIV, hepatitis, and anything else that might be, introduced under the skin or into someone's vein.
Well, you're listening to The Final Straw on Asheville FM, ashevillefm.org. I'm your host, Persa Goodness. We're joined by Michael Harney of the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville. Michael Harney also works with the Western North Carolina AIDS Project, and we're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
But it was still out of sight. So I sat up with those leaves, and I felt them under me, and I watched as something turned quiet. And somehow it makes sense how it all comes to an end, only to begin again. And summer's pile of regrets, summer springs lost bets. If it wasn't fall outside, it wasn't. So just find out your coat. Here it comes, here we go. Remember, Tom never knows. And the colors are gonna be ones like you've never seen. So say goodbye to spring. Here it comes, incredible yellow and edible orange. And you can just get on down to a feel good hit of the fall. Seasons come, seasons go, and the
that's the price to pay. Cause there's few things more beautiful than spring.
Back to The Final Straw on Asheville Free Media, AshevilleFM.org, also rebroadcast on KWTF in Sonoma County, California, and KXCF in Marshall, California. We're joined today by Michael Harney, who's the coordinator of NEPA, the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville, and Michael also works with WNCAP. Is it? Were you saying WNCAP?
Yeah, we say WNCAP.
The Western North Carolina AIDS Project. And we're talking about needle exchange and harm reduction. So how are the needs of prisoners met in as far as access to clean needles and condoms?
It's pretty rough across the country. A few places, I'm not even sure I could name them, that that actually provide condoms. I think there are three or four states that in the state prison systems might allow condoms in or available. Needles are really hard. And I know that part of my frustration, I guess, is that I'm used to wide open, very progressive, maybe radical conversations that seem radical to others. To me, they seem logical and rational and realistic. And as long as we're not going to have these realistic conversations or discussions, the things that are ills in our society continue, and they continue to be out of control. So we know that sex and drugs happen in prisons. They may not always happen in the local detention centers, but some of the bigger cities they probably do. And until we come to that grip, that, you know, that reality, people then do what they can to use needles. If they have to, you know, steal a needle in the infirmary and it gets used by however many people, and if it's a tattoo needle, you know, things like that, those are further healthcare cost burdens to our country, to the person himself or herself, you know, to the society in general, you know, to the world. Why don't we just understand that sometimes people do have sex in prison? Sometimes people do have drug use issues. And so I think it's tough. It's a tough issue, but these are always controversial issues. I just wish more people were talking about them or writing articles about them or advocating for legislation to, you know, to allow there to be some more harm reduction even in the prison systems.
And not to monetize the issue, because it extends far more than the actual economic cost, but that is something, like, that's an argument that certain people will listen to. In that Mountain Express article, The Sticking Point, you say that a total lifetime cost of an HIV infection, as suggested by the NC Department of Health and Human Services, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000 per person. Using a needle or syringe that costs 15 cents or a dollar sure beats paying for a new infection when we know the prevention tools work.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of, you know, reality thinking, you know, the rational thinking, the realistic thinking that I think we should be having and the discussion to have. You're right. I don't want to monetize this, but if we can prevent three new HIV infections, according to North Carolina's estimated lifetime cost of an HIV infection, you're close to $1 million of savings. Well, then what do you want to do with $1 million? You want free lunches for everybody? Great. You want a paved road that hasn't been paved? Great. You know, you want more books in the library or more computer access or, you know, a program to teach dance, an art after school program? What do you want with an extra $1 million? And all I'm asking for is for, you know, a few 10-cent, you know, dollar needles or whatever, some condoms, some comprehensive sex education. There's a an organization, it's called the Kaiser Family Foundation, so kff.org, and they have a annual report that's HIV/AIDS in the United States, and as of March 2011, they report the economic impact of the United States' effort to combat HIV totaled $26 billion worth of our taxpaying dollars. And the 50% of that, according to their report, goes to care, and that's when somebody already has HIV that gets the care that they get from getting the high-cost medications, the pharmaceutical products that keep them alive. You know, we have people living longer now with HIV, not dying like they used to. And yet only 3% of that $26 billion, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, only 3% of that goes to prevention. I like to put 20% of that into prevention. 10%. Give me 10% out of, you know what I'm saying, something that we have more access to condoms, information, programs, needle exchanges, the things that we know absolutely work. Implement those and all the other stuff that, you know, in addition to those two basic items, those two tools of prevention, you can add pre-exposure prophylaxis if that's what you want. You know, medical male circumcision is an issue, you know, reducing mother-to-child transmission and, you know, education programs or whatever. But give me the basics, mm-hmm. is how I see it. And it's a tough situation. So you don't want to monetize this so much. But on the other hand, you're talking about millions and billions of unnecessarily wasted money when we could really be preventing it and then use the money in other ways in our community that aren't necessary too. I'm not trying to take away from anybody else. There are plenty of other needs in our community. Just locally, Meals on Wheels is having a tough time feeding people who are homebound and stuck, mm-hmm. that need one hot meal a day. You know, put $1 million into their pocket and see what they do with it. You know, if we could. And so in North Carolina, this is just North Carolina data, but the CDC says that across the country there are about 50,000 new HIV infections. They're not even talking hepatitis right now, mm-hmm. even though we know that hepatitis is a whole, and hepatitis C in particular, is a whole nother amazing wave, epidemic going on without any real effort to stop it. I mean, there's some effort, but not enough. We need, as Dave Purchase, there's a guy at the North American Syringe Exchange Network, his name is Dave Purchase, everybody loves him. He says, we need another pie. We keep cutting the one pie we have, we keep cutting away at it, and there's nothing left. We need another pie. And, you know, we use some of the money from another pie to help address hepatitis prevention. But it's just, it's hard. The CDC says there's 50,000 new HIV infections that occur in this country every year. And I guess if you're a real mathematician and you're listening, the way that I report this back out to the people, if I'm going to speak at your treatment center or group, in North Carolina, we've reported 1,620 new case reports of HIV last year. So 1,600, roughly, new case reports. Well, case reports may have been from infections that occurred several years ago or whenever. So I can't really say that if you divide 50 states into 50,000 new infections per year, it's 1,000 per state, and that our 1,600 is the actual number. But we're showing 1,600 or so new HIV infection case reports every single year in North Carolina. So something's wrong. Mm-hmm. If I can prevent 3 of those, 6 of those, our incidence of HIV related to intravenous drug use, or MSMIDU, that's men who have sex with men and who are intravenous drug users, so those are the two categories, are at about 4 to 8% of our total case reports of HIV. So you're talking about 80 to 100 or so, roughly 80 to 100, maybe a few more than that, cases of HIV related to a needle transmission. So if I could prevent those, what if I could prevent 40 of those? Mm-hmm. You know, how many millions of potential dollars do we have to put into all sorts of other things? That's all. Monetize it or not, we are talking about public health costs, and a way to reduce those is to be realistic with our prevention.
So we were talking before about harm reduction as a philosophy and just kind of doing this sort of triage around an issue, sort of like focusing on the most important immediate things, stopping the bleeding right where it is, or getting the person out of a dangerous circumstance, then stopping the bleeding and going towards the thing that can be most directly affected to stop the stemming of other problems. And where that fits in, like at the moment you aren't a certified healthcare professional like a nurse or a doctor.
That's correct.
But working in that field, you still, I'm sure, like appreciate and work through the Hippocratic Oath saying like do no harm. How does harm reduction in the form of needle exchange look through the viewpoint of the Hippocratic Oath?
Kind of depends on who you're looking at or talking to, I guess. There are obviously some wonderful and very thoughtful scientists and researchers and authors that write about harm reduction. I mean, the basic concept is, as we said earlier, is, you know, to reduce the harms, the things that are harmful in our lives, whatever those be. And you know, we talk about air filtration systems in our homes, water filtration systems in our homes. You know, do we reduce our intake of things that are bad? So, you know, a far-reaching concept is to have pharmaceutical-grade drugs that are available to people so that they don't have to buy them on the street, and they could be cut up with who knows what. We don't know. So is that a harm reduction? Yeah, that to me is a realistic kind of conversation. To have wet houses for people who are alcoholics that are not ready to stop drinking, who want to drink alcohol all day long, but be in a safe, sheltered environment. If they want to sit in a picnic bench where there's an environment that may have a roof over the head of the folks who might be sitting in there, then they're not being rained on. They're not homeless, stuck in a tent in the middle of the woods under a bridge, all these kinds of things. So we've got a long way to go in this country. It's bad enough, worldwide, but we got plenty to do here, too, to reduce harm. How does it... how do you triage somebody in terms of harm reduction and needle exchange? Where we've ever been to any of the exchanges, it seemed very welcoming. So that was the first thing. You came in and people say, "Hey, how are you, Mike? Good to see you, man. Come on in. Glad you could make it today." "Yeah, I'm sorry. We're only open from 4 to 7 or whatever. Is that really a hard time for you? You got to give us some feedback too, Mike, because we want you participating in this. So maybe we give you a little bit of hope that somebody even cares what you have to say or think about. Hey, Mike, how many did you bring in today? 10, 20, 30? Great. We want you to put them in a proper disposal, box. So if it's a laundry detergent bottle, that's that nice hard plastic that you might see those red boxes made out of in a medical setting. But they work. It's a nice place to dispose them. Bring them on in. And we might have an agreement that if we don't have an exact count of the needles, that a small laundry detergent bottle has 150 in it. An extra large bottle might, we say, it has 200 or 300 needles in it. So there are some exchanges that are one-for-one exchange. You have to show me 10, and I give you 10. Some are like, "Well, how many did you have?" 50? Okay, we'll throw 50 in there. You need 60? Great, we'll give you 60. In case there are other people who didn't make it today, and maybe you become a secondary exchanger for those folks who are your friends or people you know. So that's harm reduction. "Hey, Mike, while you're here, why don't we get you some nice tourniquets so that you have something that's a little bit, in terms of reducing harm to your arms? And you've got antibiotic ointment if you needed to put something on a little needle stick. Or do you use alcohol swabs? Would you like to see this book, Getting Off Right, to look at where your veins are and how to avoid the valves in your veins, so that you don't blow out your veins? And how do you reduce the possible risk of overdose?" All of these kinds of things. And if somebody around you is overdosing, to turn them to their side so that if they were to vomit, that they wouldn't asphyxiate. If you can't stay there and call 911, that you call 911 anyway and tell them where the person is, what they've done, and then get the heck out of there, that you're not putting yourself at risk. We understand that. That's all harm reduction. And so maybe we also say in a comprehensive harm reduction program that includes needle exchange, so you've gotten your supplies, but Mike, we've got a really cool nurse or a doctor that volunteers here. Why don't you go on back there and talk to them about your what sounds like bronchitis? Why don't you get an HIV or hepatitis C test while you're here? Why don't you have them look at your feet because your feet stink, and maybe you need some new socks. We got some new socks right here, but maybe the doctor can look at your toenails if you've got an ingrown toenail or something. That's the kind of stuff that I've seen provided at comprehensive harm reduction programs across the country and outside of this country. And then the little old ladies right next door to us, you know, that have the church over there, they brought some sandwiches and bottled water and juice to us today, and they do that every week, Mike. They're really cool people. I know, you know, some people have controversial issues with churches or whatever, but these folks see what we're doing is benefiting their communities, and they wanted to be involved. They feed lunches on, you know, on Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays, and you can come into the Needle Exchange here, and they give us some leftover, you know, sandwich meats and cheese or whatever it is. Take care of your nutrition, Mike. Hey, we were thinking about watching a movie. You want to hang out here? You know, the one rule we've seen across the country, it seems to be the agreement is that you won't be using on our property. Mm-hmm. You know, if this is not we're in Canada, you know, they have some of the safe fix zones, you know, where you can go in and have a sterile environment. You can get your fix. You can, you know, go on back out in the community and do what you want. But at least there's a nurse there to monitor if there's a problem or an overdose or any kind of issues, you know, those kinds of things. So I'd love to see that happen. It's just not widespread here in this country and at this point. But, you know, hey, Mike, hang out with us for a little while. If you want to take a shower, we got a shower stall or not. You know, there's a bathroom, but please just don't use in here. Just respect this so that we can keep it going. You know, that's the agreement we've made with the bureaucracy. You know, there's a bureaucratic component to everything, it seems. And then, Mike, before you leave, if you ever want to talk to those people from First Incorporated or the Alcohol and Drug Treatment Center or Western Carolina Treatment Center, the Suboxone Center, whatever it is, you know, we've got those people here every week. They're ready when you are. We got treatment on demand. That would be an ideal situation. It's not happening as we have our program right now. But, you know, that's harm reduction to us. Mm-hmm. Come on back, Mike. If you're not ready today, we'll be here next Thursday. We'll be here next Tuesday. Love to see you, man. Bring somebody back if you want. You know, that's how we see it.
And that's what you've got your sights honed in on is
that's the vision.
Good model.
Right. Mm-hmm. At this point, the Needle Exchange Program is more of a mobile unit that not even a unit in the sense of Winnebago. And, you know, we've seen those across the country, Washington, D.C. and in Maryland, things like that, in Hawaii, where there's a mobile unit that pulls up and everybody knows the van. It's just we're too small community here for there to be a mobile unit. People know my truck with the Needle Exchange, you know, Saves Lives bumper sticker on the back of it. But beyond that, you wouldn't necessarily know that this is the, you know, harm reduction van that everybody pulls up in and gets in and goes through and comes out. You know, we deliver as people call us and set up a place to meet. And it might be a parking lot somewhere, a grocery store, a gas station, or wherever it is. But we get people what they need as they need it. Sometimes it takes several hours before we can meet.
So just because we've only got about 10 minutes left, as far as with NEPA, how does one get in contact with y'all if they need the services? And how does one get involved if they want to help out or start a program like this in their own community?
A couple of ways that if you are from out of town in particular and you've come through, let's say you come through North Carolina or just Asheville, people should know the number 1-800-CDC-INFO. It's 232-4636. So it's the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's kind of a national hotline. And you can call and ask, is there an AIDS project near me? Is there a place I can get some free condoms? Are there needle exchanges that you know about? If people knew enough to maybe look online for needle exchange services in Asheville, the Asheville program might come up. If you went to harmreduction.org, so that's out of New York City, they keep a really cool directory, and it's effective in terms of you click on the state and they tell you what programs are available in the state, and our phone number is listed there. If you were in contact with the North American Syringe Exchange Network, they keep they're the kind of the mother organization of all the 210 or so needle exchange programs in the country right now. They have a directory and can put us in contact or put you in contact with those exchange programs. Locally, if you are here in Asheville, and listening or would like services, we are at area code 828-274-8397. And that will say you've reached Michael Harney in the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville. Please leave a message with your phone number because I don't have caller ID and it's not a cell phone number. Please leave your message and we'll call you back within 24 hours if I'm in town. You could also contact the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. So the two ways of doing that, beyond the CDC info would be to go to our website, which is the acronym for the Western North Carolina AIDS Project. So WWWNCA for Apple, P for project. It's the Western North Carolina AIDS Project.org. And on there, there'll be contact information to us. You can call us at 828-252-7489. And my extension is 311. Leave me a message there. Though the Needle Exchange Program of Asheville is not a program of WinCap, I'm the guy that works there. I'm the rubber man, the needle guy, the AIDS guy, you know, comes out and does the programs kind of thing. So be in touch. Those people who want to volunteer, that gets a little bit tougher. We've had some great opportunities, you know, and people have really wanted to give back and be a volunteer. But at this point, because it's still illegal in North Carolina, there are no protections for someone who may volunteer. And I always say, if you want to take some supplies and become a secondary exchanger with somebody, whether you're using needles or not, but you might know people who are, you're welcome to get some supplies and take those. I'm not asking you who's using them or whatever. I just, you know, want to make sure that we've had a discussion about proper disposal, the benefits of using an alcohol swab, you know, what size needle people want because they want a variety. We use a lot of 30-gauge needles here, where some cities they might need 27s and 25s, which are bigger needles, actually. You know, I would say be active in your political systems as well. Write a letter to the governor and let the governor here know why needle exchange is important, why harm reduction programs should be supported, you know, that we need some action in our state and stop fooling around with lives. This is a public health issue, and we're wasting time, and unnecessarily people are becoming infected without some just the basic knowledges of how not to get infected. It's a real challenge.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I'll post up all that contact information on the www.ashvillefm.org/the-final-straw website, or the blog. And hopefully this will spread the practice. Thanks so much for joining us and for the work that you do.
Well, let's keep having this conversation and come back to it, okay?
Sounds good.
Thanks.
All right. You've been listening to Asheville Free Media, ashvillefm.org. This is your host, Bursa Goodness, for The Final Straw. And The Final Straw is brought to you by the worker owners at Firestorm Books and Cafe at 48 Commerce Street here in downtown Asheville, North Carolina, providing organic coffees and milks, vegan sandwiches, homemade baked goods, radical literature, and a community calendar that's available at www.firestormcafe.com. And the show is also being rebroadcast on LPFM KXCF in Marshall, California, and soon to be rebroadcast on the airwaves of KWTF in Western Sonoma County. I hope you all have a great week. Take care.
And how we to and fro to. and all them vulgar kings on the dirty throne. Fresh meat in the club tonight, God bless our dead Marines. Someone had an accident above the burning trees. While somewhere distant peacefully, our vulgar princess slays. Dead kids don't get photographed, God bless our dead Marines.
Can no one be well, but can.